him, and he joined his friend in death. He looked about 30 pounds lighter. LaBeef said, "I told you we should have separated them." Rooster said nothing to that, not wishing to own he had made a mistake. He went through the pockets of the dead thieves and put such oddments as he found upon the table. The lantern was beyond repair, and LaBeef brought out a candle from his saddle wallet and lit it and fixed it on the table. Rooster turned up a few coins and cartridges and notes of paper money and a picture of a pretty girl torn from an illustrated paper and pocket knives and a plug of tobacco. He also found a California gold piece in Quincy's vest pocket. I fairly shouted when I saw it. "That is my father's gold piece," said I. "Let me have it." It was not a round coin, but a rectangular slug of gold that was minted in the Golden State and was worth $36 and some few cents. Rooster said, "I never seen a piece like this before. Are you sure it is the one?" I said, "Yes, Grandfather Sperling gave Papa two of these when he married Mama. That scoundrel Cheney has still got the other one. We are on his trail for certain."
"We are on Ned's trail, anyhow," said Rooster. "I expect it's the same thing. I wonder how Quincy got a hold of this. Is this Cheney a gambler?"
LaBeef said, "He likes a game of cards. I reckon Ned has called off the robbery if he's not here by now."
"Well, we won't count on that," said Rooster. "Saddle the horses and I'll lug these boys out."
"Do you aim to run?" said LaBeef.
Rooster turned a glittering eye on him.
"I aim to do what I come out here to do," said he. "Saddle the horses."
Rooster directed me to straighten up the inside of the dugout. He carried the bodies out and concealed them in the woods. I sacked up the turkey fragments and pitched the wrecked lantern into the fireplace and stirred around on the dirt floor with a stick to cover the blood. Rooster was planning an ambush. When he came back from his second trip to the woods, he brought a load of limbs for the fireplace. He built up a big fire so there would be light and smoke and indicate that the cabin was occupied. Then we went out and joined LaBeef and the horses in the brush arbor. This dwelling, as I have said, was set back in a hollow where two slopes pinched together in a kind of V. It was a good place for what Rooster had in mind. He directed LaBeef to take his horse and find a position up on the north slope about midway along one stroke of the V, and explained that he would take up a corresponding position on the south slope. Nothing was said about me with regard to the plan, and I elected to stay with Rooster. He said to LaBeef,
"Find you a good place up yonder, and then don't move about. Don't shoot unless you hear me shoot. What we want is to get them all in the dugout. I'll kill the last one to go in, and then we'll have them in a barrel."
"You'll shoot him in the back?" asked LaBeef.
"It'll give them to know our intentions is serious. These ain't chicken thieves. I don't want you to start shooting unless they break. After my first shot, I'll call down and see if they will be taken alive. If they won't, we'll shoot them as they come out."
"There is nothing in this plan but a lot of killing," said LaBeef.
"We want Chelmsford alive, don't we? You're not giving them any show." "It is no use giving Ned and Hayes a show. If they're taken, they'll hang, and they know it. They'll go for a fight every time. The others may be chicken-hearted and give up. I don't know. Another thing, we don't know how many there is. I do know there's just two of us. Why don't I try to wing Chelmsford before he gets inside?" "I don't like that," said Rooster. "If there's any shooting before they get in that dugout, we're likely to come up with an empty sack. I want Ned, too. I want all of them."
"All right," said LaBeef. "But if they do break, I'm going for Chelmsford."
"You're liable to kill him with that big sharps, no matter where you hit him. You go for Ned, and I'll try to nick this Cheney in the legs."
"What does Ned look like?"
"He's a little fella. I don't know what he'll be riding. He'll be doing a lot of talking. Just go for the littlest one.
What if they hole up in there for a siege? They may figure on staying till dark and then breaking.
I don't think they will, said Rooster. Now, don't keep on with this. Get on up there. If something queer turns up, you'll just have to use your head.
How long will we wait?
Till daylight, anyhow.
I don't think they are coming now.
Well, you may be right. Now move. Keep your eyes open and your horse quiet. Don't go to sleep, and don't get the gym jams.
Rooster took a cedar bough and brushed around over all our tracks in front of the dugout. Then we took our horses and led them up a hill and a roundabout route along a rocky stream bed. We went over the crest, and Rooster posted me there with the horses. He told me to talk to them or give them some oats or put my hand over their nostrils if they started blowing or neighing. He put some corn dodgers in his pocket and left to go for his ambush position. I said, "I cannot see anything from here."
He said, "This is where I want you to stay."
"I am going with you, where I can see something."
"You'll do like I tell you."
"The horses will be all right."
"You've not seen enough killing tonight?"
"I am not staying here by myself." We started back over the ridge together. I said, "Wait, I will go back and get my revolver." But he grabbed me roughly and pulled me along after him, and I left the pistol behind. He found us a place behind a big log that offered a good view of the hollow and the dugout. We kicked the snow back so that we could rest on the leaves underneath. Rooster loaded his rifle from a sack of cartridges and placed the sack on the log where he would have it ready at hand. He got out his revolver and put a cartridge into the one chamber that he kept empty under the hammer. The same shells fit his pistol and rifle alike. I thought you had to have different kinds. I bunched myself up inside the slicker and rested my head against the log. Rooster ate a corn dodger and offered me one. I said, "Strike a match and let me look at it first."
"What for?" said he.
"There was blood on some of them."
"We ain't striking no matches."
"I don't want it then. Let me have some taffy."
"It is all gone."
I tried to sleep, but it was too cold. I cannot sleep when my feet are cold. I asked Rooster what he had done before he became a federal marshal.
"I done everything but keep school," said he.
"What was one thing you did?" said I.
"I skinned buffalo and killed wolves for bounty out there on the Yellow House Creek in Texas. I seen wolves out there that weighed 150 pounds.
"Did you like it?"
"It paid well enough, but I didn't like that open country. Too much wind to suit me. There ain't but about 6 trees between there and Canada. Some people like it fine. Everything that grows out there has got stickers on it."
"Have you ever been to California?"
"I never got out there."
"My grandfather Sperling lives in Monterey, California. He owns a store there, and he can look out his window anytime he wants to and see the blue ocean. He sends me $5 every Christmas. He has buried 2 wives and is now married to one called Jenny, who is 31 years of age. That is 1 year younger than Mama. Mama will not even say her name."
"I fooled around in Colorado for a spell, but I never got out to California. I freighted supplies for a man named Cook out of Denver."
"Did you fight in the war?"
"Yes, I did."
"Papa did, too. He was a good soldier."
"I expect he was."
"Did you know him?"
"No. Where was he?"
"He fought at Elkhorn Tavern in Arkansas and was badly wounded at Chickamauga up in the state of Tennessee. He came home after that and nearly died on the way. He served in General Churchill's brigade."
"I was mostly in Missouri."
"Did you lose your eye in the war?"
"I lost it in the fight at Lone Jack out of Kansas City. My horse was down, too, and I was all but blind. Cole Younger crawled out under a hail of fire and pulled me back. Poor Cole. He and Bob and Jim are now doing life in the Minnesota pen. You watch when the truth is known. They will find it was Jesse W. James that shot that cashier in Northfield."
"Do you know Jesse James?"
"I don't remember him,
Potter tells me he was with us at Centralia and killed a Yankee major there. Potter said he was a mean little viper then, though he was only a boy. Said he was meaner than Frank. That is going some, if it be so. I remember Frank well. We called him Buck then. I don't remember Jesse. Now you're working for the Yankees. Well, the times has changed since Betsy died. I would have never thought it back then. The Redlegs from Kansas burned my folks out and took their stock. They didn't have nothing to eat but clabber and roasting ears. You can eat a peck of roasting ears and go to bed hungry.
What did you do when the war was over?
Well, I will tell you what I done. When we heard they had all give up in Virginia, Potter and me rode into Independence and turned over our arms. They asked us was we ready to respect the government in Washington City and take an oath to the Stars and Stripes. We said yes, we was about ready. We done it, we swallowed the puppy, but they wouldn't let us go right then. They gave us a one-day parole and told us to report back in the morning. We heard there was a Kansas major coming in that night to look over everybody for bushwhackers.
What are bushwhackers?
I don't know. That is what they called us. Anyhow, we was not easy about that Kansas major. We didn't know but what he would lock us up or worse, us having rode with Bill Anderson and Captain Quantrill. Potter lifted a revolver from an office, and we lit out that night on two government mules. I am still traveling on the one-day parole, and I reckon that Jayhawker is waiting yet. Now, our clothes was rags, and we didn't have the price of a plug of tobacco between us. About 8 miles out of town, we run into a federal captain and three soldiers. They wanted to know if they was on the right road for Kansas City. That captain was a paymaster, and we relieved them gents of over $4,000 in coin. They squealed like it was their own. It didn't belong to nobody but the government, and we needed a road stake.
$4,000?
Yes, and all in gold. We got the horses, too. Potter taken his half of the money and went down to Arkansas. I went to Cairo, Illinois with mine and started calling myself Burroughs and bought an eating place called the Green Frog and married a grass widow. It had one billiard table. We served ladies and men both, but mostly men.
I didn't know you had a wife.
Well, I don't now. She taken a notion she wanted me to be a lawyer. Running a eating place was too low down for her. She bought a heavy book called Daniels on Negotiable Instruments and set me to reading it. I never could get a grip on it. Old Daniels penned me every time. My drinking picked up, and I commenced staying away 2 and 3 days at a time with my friends. My wife did not crave the society of my river friends. She got a belly full of it and decided she would go back to her first husband, who was clerking in a hardware store over in Paducah. She said, "Goodbye, Reuben. A love for decency does not abide in you." There is your divorced woman talking about decency. I told her, I said, "Goodbye, Nola. I hope that little nail-selling bastard will make you happy this time." She took my boy with her, too. He never did like me anyhow. I guess I did speak awful rough to him, but I didn't mean nothing by it. You would not want to see a clumsier child than Horace. I bet he broke 40 cups.
What happened to the Green Frog?
I tried to run it myself for a while, but I couldn't keep good help, and I never did learn how to buy meat. I didn't know what I was doing. I was like a man fighting bees. Finally, I just give up and sold it for $900 and went out to see the country. That was when I went out to the Staked Plains of Texas and shot buffalo with Vernon Shafto and a flathead Indian called Ollie. The Mormons had run Shafto out of Great Salt Lake City, but don't ask me about what it was for. Call it a misunderstanding and let it go at that. There's no use you asking me questions about it, for I will not answer them. Ollie and me both taking a solemn oath to keep silent. Well, sir, the big shaggies is about all gone. It is a damned shame. I would give $3 right now for a pickled buffalo tongue.
They never did get you for stealing that money?
I didn't look on it as stealing.
That was what it was. It didn't belong to you.
It never troubled me in that way. I sleep like a baby. Have for years.
Colonel Stonehill said you were a road agent before you got to be a marshal.
I wondered who was spreading that talk. That old gentleman would do better minding his own business.
Then it is just talk.
It is very little more than that. I found myself one pretty spring day in Las Vegas, New Mexico, in need of a road stake, and I robbed one of them little high-interest banks there. Thought I was doing a good service.
You can't rob a thief, can you? I never robbed no citizens. I never taken a man's watch. It is all stealing, said I.
That was the position they taken in New Mexico, said he. I had to fly for my life. 3 fights in 1 day. Bo was a strong colt then, and there was not a horse in that territory could run him in the ground. But I did not appreciate being chased and shot at like a thief. When the posse had thinned down to about 7 men, I turned Bo around and taken the reins in my teeth, and I rode right at them boys, firing them 2 Navy 6s I carry on my saddle. I guess they was all married men who loved their families as they scattered and run for home.
That is hard to believe.
What is?
One man riding at 7 men like that.
It is true enough. We done it in the war. I seen a dozen bold riders stampede a full troop of regular cavalry. You go for a man hard enough and fast enough, and he don't have time to think about how many is with him. He thinks about himself and how he may get clear out of the wrath that is about to set down on him.
I think you're stretching the blanket.
Well, that was the way of it. Me and Bo walked into Texas. We didn't run. I might not do it today. I am older and stouter, and so is Bo. I lost my money to some quarter-mile horse racers out there in Texas and followed them highbinders across Red River up in the Chickasaw Nation and lost their trail. That was when I tied up with a man named Fogelson who was taking a herd of beef to Kansas. We had a pretty time with them steers. It rained every night, and the grass was spongy and rank. It was cloudy by day, and the mosquitoes eat us up. Fogelson abused us like a stepfather. We didn't know what sleep was. When we got to the South Canadian, it was all out of the banks, but Fogelson had a time contract, and he wouldn't wait. He said, "Boys, we are going across." We lost near about 70 head getting across and counted ourselves lucky. Lost our wagon, too. We done without bread and coffee after that. It was the same story all over again at the North Canadian. "Boys, we are going across." Some of them steers got bogged in the mud on the other side, and I was pulling them free. Bo was about played out, and I hollered up for that Hutchins to come help me. He was sitting up there on his horse smoking a pipe. Now, he wasn't a regular drover. He was from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and he had some interest in the herd. He said, "Do it yourself. That's what you paid for." I pulled down on him right there. It was not the thing to do, but I was wore out and hadn't had no coffee. It didn't hurt him bad. The ball just skinned his head and he bit his pipe in two. Yet nothing would do but he would have the law. There wasn't no law out there, and Fogelson told him as much, so Hutchins had me disarmed and him and 2 drovers taking me over to Fort Reno. Now, the Army didn't care nothing about his private quarrels, but there happened to be 2 federal marshals there picking up some whiskey peddlers. One of them marshals was Potter.
I was just about asleep. Rooster nudged me and said,
"I say, one of them marshals was Potter."
"What?"
"One of them 2 marshals at Fort Reno was Potter."
"It was your friend from the war? The same one?"
"Yes, it was Columbus Potter in the flesh. I was glad to see him. He didn't let on he knowed me. He told Hutchins he would take me in charge and see I was prosecuted. Hutchins said he would come back by Fort Smith when his business was done in Kansas and appear against me. Potter told him his statement right there was good enough to convict me of assault. Hutchins said he never heard of a court where they didn't need witnesses. Potter said they had found it saved time. We come on over to Fort Smith, and Potter got me commissioned as deputy marshal. Joe Shelby had vouched for him to the chief marshal and got him the job. General Shelby is in the railroad business up in Missouri now, and he knows all these Republicans. He wrote a handsome letter for me, too. Well, there is no beat of a good friend. Potter was a trump.
Do you like being a marshal?
I believe I like it better than anything I done since the war. Anything beats droving. Nothing I like to do pays well.
I don't think Cheney is going to show up.
We will get him.
I hope we get him tonight.
You told me you loved coon hunting.
I didn't expect it would be easy. I still hope we get him tonight and have it done with. Rooster talked all night. I would doze off and wake up, and he would still be talking. Some of his stories had too many people in them and were hard to follow, but they helped to pass the hours and took my mind off the cold. I did not give credence to everything he said. He said he knew a woman in Sedalia, Missouri, who had stepped on a needle as a girl, and 9 years later the needle worked out of the thigh of her 3rd child. He said it puzzled the doctors. I was asleep when the bandits arrived. Rooster shook me awake and said,
Here they come.
I gave a start and turned over on my stomach so I could peer over the log. It was false.